KBK, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Dan. Are you familiar with cognitive dissonance?
Explain cognitive, what is it, dissonance to me?
Dissonance. It's essentially to what happens when people are presented with an idea that challenges their reality of the way they believe the world is today. So
actually, I have heard of this, but it's because I think you sent me an article about it once.
Possibly.
All right, go ahead.
I really think that's what's happening here, Dan, is I'm calling in with some ideas that challenge your reality, and rather than discuss the ideas, evaluate them for yourself and give them fair and equal consideration, what you're doing is in effect attacking the messenger, dismissing the idea and moving on, so that you can stay in your little world where government's, not perfect, but necessary and required for all these things. And really, what does fire, someone's house burning down, have to do with the way government creates jobs in the economy?
For people who don't know, there was a phone call, I don't know, was it Ian, about 35 or 40 minutes ago.
This isn't Ian.
Oh, I'm sorry, you sound just like him. I guess that's probably a good thing, maybe it's not. Are you the caller that I dismissed?
Yes.
Okay. I did ask you about whether or not we needed a government, and you essentially said that there's not much, if anything, that the government provides that you think that we need, correct?
Not correct. I think the government provides a lot of services that the marketplace would absolutely demand. Fire protection, personal protection are two, very essential ones. Obviously, people are going to want their children educated. What I am saying is that government does a very poor job of that. They do it very ineffectively. They spend a lot of money. They offer very few choices when it comes to education, for example, or fire. When have you heard about the fire department pumping nitrogen or whatever the gas is into people's houses that will instantly put out the fire? In California, when the forest fires are raging across the countryside, the wealthy houses are getting sprayed down with a foam and they don't burn down. They get pumped with nitrogen so the fire can't burn inside their house. But the government fire system doesn't provide that service. Now, if that was being provided across the country, then you would probably have, it would be much cheaper to do, and the service would be available to far more people. But because we have government in control of all these services, monopolizing them, and they have no incentive, no competition to drive innovation and new products, you're going to get the same old service. I mean, look at the roads. What was the last innovation you saw on roads? The LED traffic lights?
Actually, it's the special chemicals now being used to pre-treat roads as opposed to salting them after they're covered with snow. They pre-treat them. But, there's actually a lab and a department at Dartmouth College that studies better and more efficient ways to remove snow and ice from roadways and to make them less prone to frost heaving. But that's...
So here's the thing, Dan.
Yeah.
Disney, 50 years ago, was talking about roads that wouldn't allow snow and ice to accumulate. If you had probably tens of thousands of private road owners in America who are all spending money on their roads, they're going to push these companies a lot harder than a government who is coercively funded, who's going to get their money no matter what, who doesn't have to worry about making a profit, who doesn't have to worry about margins, who doesn't have to worry about innovation to keep up with what their thousands of other competitors are doing.
I understand the argument. We've had it before, too, but I think they also, meaning a business owner, has to recognize whether or not there's a market. You're a person right now, you're making ends meet, you're not saving a lot of money, and you've got concerns about sending your kids to college, and all of a sudden a guy knocks on your door and says, hey, tell you what I'll do. I'm going to be your fireman. When you have a fire, I can be here in 15 minutes. I'm going to shoot gas into your house. I'm going to coat it in foam. Me and a bunch of other guys are going to put that fire out, and I'm only going to charge you $99 a month to be on call to put out that fire. And you know what I say to that guy? I don't have $9, let alone $99. And by the way, I can place a phone call, and I'm going to have the fire department here in the exact same amount of time, and they're going to put out the fire. Or at least they're going to attempt to do so. So here's the thing. You ask the question, and you ask yourself, who's in the market for this sort of thing? Now, obviously, if there was a huge market, you'd see it a lot more. Now, I'm not saying that down in Florida, where I just was, where every house is a $1 million house in one particular city, like Sarasota, $1 million house after $1 million house. Well, okay. It might suffice to have that there. But are most places like Sarasota, Florida? No. Their real estate market's in the top 1%. So that's why businesses like that, I don't think, will flourish. The whole thing, and I swear to God, if I hear the argument about privatized roads one more time, I'm going to puke. You know how many miles of roadways there are in this country? And how many people will actually pay to drive on them versus getting to drive on them for essentially no charge?
Everybody is paying to drive on them now. That's this concept that people have that, oh, all these services the government provides are free. No, they're not free. You're paying for them in gas taxes. You're paying for them in all of these property income and,
no, I realize
and various
that.
Taxes that are out there.
I understand
and
that.
You're paying probably a 30 to 50% premium. So people who really want value would let the private market take this over.
Now, but here's the deal, because there's no money to be made to privatize Route 124, the road that I live on. There's absolutely no money to privatize the highway, the roadway that I live on off of Route 124. So
okay,
who's going to take care of that road?
So you think then the answer is to force your neighbors to pay for it because they don't use it. Is that what you're telling me?
We pay our share of all the roads we use because it's not the only road I use.
Dan, I'm talking about your road. Do you think it's right for your neighbors to be forced to pay for you to have a nice, high-quality road that you can drive into your house on?
I didn't say it was a nice, high-quality road.
Well,
Jesus, it's full of potholes. My point being, we all share in it together to know that if the private marketplace took all care of all the highways, roadways, and bridges, only the wealthy people would be able to afford it. Only they would have fine roads, and the rest of us eventually would be bushwhacking. Again, I don't mind hearing the argument from you libertarian people, but you got to leave the privatizing the roads, privatizing fire and stuff alone. You got to talk about what's practical and how to get there. And it's not, and I'm sorry, maybe that's closed-minded of me. But let's talk about things that are more important and things that are actually realistic. Please, please. You know, if you people are sick of being called nuts, here's a clue. Here's a hint for you, a little advice. Stop acting nutty, and people won't call you nuts. Well, no, that's not anarchy. Well, fine. Go along being irrelevant. 357-1290-866, 357-1290, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Dan. It's Ian from freekeen.com. How are you today?
You do sound like that other guy.
Well, I don't know why that would be. I think he sounds very different from me. But
you were the one that probably sent me that article, because at first I thought you were
no,
him.
No, I haven't sent anything to you for a long time.
Well, this was a while ago. But anyway, go ahead.
So,
what's on your mind, Ian?
So you said that you don't think that the building or privately owning whatever road it was could be profitable. And,
right.
You know, that's certainly your opinion. However, odds are good you probably wouldn't end up being the road owner. And so what I'm trying to explain to you is that you don't really know how you could make a profit from that road because you're not in the road business. You're in the radio business. You're not a road innovator. You're not a road entrepreneur. There may be various different ways that the road could become profitable.
Right.
And even if it couldn't, Dan, that's okay. Prior to the time that governments took control or seized control over roads, they were run privately, and people did get together in their communities voluntarily to fund these things. So when you say that that liberty-minded people are nutty, what you're essentially saying is that, well, I think that voluntarily funding these government services is nutty. I think the idea of people getting together on a consensual basis and taking care of these problems is nutty. There's nothing nutty about people getting together and helping one another.
And by that you mean pooling their resources, not their time and energy, but their resources to
all
take care
above.
Of a 10-mile stretch of road.
All of the above. I mean, whatever it takes to get it done, people in the marketplace can do it better than the government because they don't have the coercion.
Now, am I accurate roughly on this, that in order for a business, any business, whether it's a private road business or a guy that owns a pharmacy or whatever, is part of the business model is to have, you ask yourself, do I have enough customers to sustain the business and make a profit? Do you agree with that?
That's pretty important.
Do you agree with that? Yeah, so it's important. I mean, that's a basic premise of business. So if you live on a country road that has 15 houses on it, and yet it's a pretty long stretch of road, and you're saying, do I take that road and buy it or own it, maintain it, sustain it, and charge these customers, or do I take that road over there that's the same stretch, you know, length of roadway, but there are 50 houses on it? You want to go where the customers are. It's like the internet and high-speed internet and what happened with Verizon, right? They had a choice. Do we put in the fiber optic cable and offer it in the cities where we have hundreds of thousands of more customers?
Sure.
Or do we put it in Berlin, New Hampshire, where there might be, I don't know, 30,000 people living and only 5,000 can afford high-speed internet? So what do you do? I mean, that drives the marketplace. That's why, and by the way, the whole idea of people volunteering to get out there and help each other fix up the road. I don't know about you. You're a busy guy. I'm a busy guy. I don't have time to read a book, let alone and volunteer 10 hours a week to go out and plow.
That's not
my...
what I was suggesting. The term voluntary means that people interact on a voluntary basis. It doesn't mean that you're going out there and slinging tar around, unless that's something that interests you. Obviously, you can go down to the community kitchen, you can volunteer in the kitchen,
yeah.
Or you can go down there and you can cut a check, or you can choose to do nothing. Now, the problem with government is it doesn't allow you to choose to do nothing. Not that I'm saying that people should choose to do nothing when it comes to helping others. I'm saying they should be free to make that choice. If, for whatever reason, they don't want to support whatever organization you're talking about, whether they're repairing roads or feeding poor people or whatever it is they're doing, if you choose that you don't want to support them because you might want to support another organization, or maybe you just need to, you know, put some food on your own family's table this month, you should be able to make those choices.
And
but in the world we live in today, Dan, no one is free to make those choices.
Realistically, in any society, if you have a group of people and you have some people in that group that refuse to volunteer, they refuse to give, they refuse to help, what happens to those people usually in that group, in that society?
Perhaps they would be ostracized.
So then what happens to them?
Well, that would depend on...
Then are they still free to make the choices they make? And are they then still taken care of, provided for? Are they given other opportunities to contribute?
It would all depend. The answer
or are they voted off the island? They're voted off the island. Right?
The answer is different for every individual. Each
right.
individual in the marketplace would have to decide how to handle those folks. Would they show them, you know, attempt to persuade them differently? Would they attempt to ostracize them? How severe would the ostracism be? Each individual would make their own decision, and that's what the marketplace is great about, because it doesn't require some centralized bureaucracy to make the ultimate decision for each individual's life, because each person can make those choices for themselves. And
how is it any different than to have a mob mentality forcing people to volunteer, or else they're going to be ostracized, versus the government saying, you pay us taxes and we'll provide you with highways, roadways, bridges, education, fire, police, civil defense, etc.? How is that any different?
There's a difference because there's no threat of force involved.
Oh, no. Okay, so I'm on the island and I'm not helping to cook, clean, or provide anything to the tribe. I'm not going to be forced into a decision. I'm going to be thrown out into a boat and set adrift in the ocean. So either way, you have some. There's always going to be a leader. There's always going to be control. There's always going to be power over another. That's the way the human society is. And it's a sad fact, but I think it's true. Ian, always love to have you on the show. Glad you called in. 9:39. And as always, a couple of callers have completely changed the direction this show was going in, taking us off local issues and on to other issues. It happens. 357-1290, 866, 357-1290. You're next. We'd love to have you join us. Your open mic program continues. Get in line on the phone lines. 357-1290. It's your open mic show. Good morning. KBK, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Good morning.
That's cool. I'll be listening to that show.
Yeah, it should be pretty good.
Big time aviation. I think the forefathers, the original free staters of New Hampshire, would be rolling in their grave with some of the talk that's coming out of the new free staters. And I cherish the ground my volunteer fire department walks on. I live right across the street from them. They just had a funeral Saturday, and there was 200 people over there. And these guys risk their life. They're not getting paid, you know.
And I don't think anybody disagrees with that. And I don't think the Free Staters disagree with that. In fact, that's a good example of volunteerism to put out fires.
That's the original Free Stater mentality.
Right.
It's not this whole smear with roads. I wish the firefighters would call in and give their perspective. The city of Keene. Anybody listening out there? Have a good day, Danny.
Appreciate the phone call. 357-1290. You're on the air, KBK. Good morning.
Yeah, the roads thing is a lot more simpler than Ian is putting out there. Let's go back into a situation that didn't exist, but let's assume it did. Let's say there's no government coercion in roads, no government money going to roads. All roads were built where they weren't built by the people who need to use them. Okay, here's what would happen. You do see this from time to time in large apartment complexes, condo complexes, shopping centers, where they have to build their own systems because all the government builds is roads from one spot to another, literally from one business to another. So the only thing that would have to be taken over is a businessman. If he wanted to have people in his business, he would have to link up his business in some form or fashion with other existing systems, roads, whatever. It's really simple. If you wanted people to go to your apartment complex, you had to link up. That's all you have to do. You don't have to build miles and miles of roads. You have to build a road from your apartment complex to, I don't know, whatever existing before. What you have
it's
with
called
government
a, it's called
is they
a,
build... They
it's
build
called these. A driveway.
I'm not talking about driveways. I'm talking about... Think about it, Dan. If you have an apartment complex, is anyone going to rent from you if they cannot get to you? If you have a hardware store, is anyone going to buy from you if they cannot get to you? Now, there'll be a lot. Sure, you see this a lot before the income tax rolled in and they funneled huge amounts of money to the road system. You see this entirely in small cities. Look at downtown. Look how relatively compact it is. You go to New York City, you go to some of the old European cities, they're extremely compact. Long before the income tax rolled around, Chicago, it's a very compact downtown. The reason, they didn't used to have massive sums of money. And the same thing would be true if a private developer, it would be the developers building roads. The road developer would be the, why do they build hallways and buildings? You can't rent a square footage of hallway out. You can't, you can rent the room out. You can rent the Keene Middle School has this fantasy of selling their middle school if they get that new one. There's hallways in there to get from one classroom to another. If they rent it out, it'll become office buildings. But you have ways to get from one spot to another. You don't rent those out by the square footage, but they're necessary. Same thing with bathrooms. You don't rent bathrooms out, but you either have bathrooms in your building or you're not going to have customers renting from you for office space. Elevators are very expensive. If you don't have elevators... You have an entire segment of elderly population, people that are disabled, that are not going to frequent your business.
So,
point blank.
So again, what you're saying is true, but now apply that though to the world in which we live now in the United States.
The only difference between that and what we live in now is you have miles and miles of roads. Urban sprawl is entirely a government creation. If you didn't have government building these roads, you know, they talk about bridges to nowhere, but some of these roads, they go to, you were talking about 15 houses out in the middle of nowhere. What developer has money to build miles and miles of roads out into the middle of nowhere to put a $250,000 house?
So let's say that we never developed.
It wouldn't exist.
Exactly. Everybody would live in, 20 or 30 different places in the country. There wouldn't be rural areas.
There's 300 million people. The miles and miles of roads would be enormous. There's always you probably wouldn't have paved roads in the country.
Well, a lot of places where the farms are, but you wouldn't have
wannabe yippies going out in the country buying $250,000 houses complaining about their roading isn't paved. But even farms have to have a way to get from here to there. There's no other way around it. If you have to go. You're not going to buy a farm if you can't find a way to get your food to the market. It's just not going to happen. But this is what would happen if it had been from the beginning. You didn't use all this force and violence to force money out of people. Government forced money out of people, and then, hey, when the income tax came around, they had lots of money to play with. All these people that think the income tax isn't a boon for every government and their supporters. Every major road creation in this country started after the 50s when the income tax became a general income tax.
Without the revenue, without the wherewithal, then this country would look, and I don't argue with you, by the way, on this, would be a much different place. We'd all be living in high rises in cities.
Probably. because that's the cheapest way. Because again, you can't rent hallways out. Yeah. You can't rent roads out. Not effectively. But
let me ask you this grand question. Given the choice. Lifestyle choice. And again, I know when we get into this whole non-governmental thing, lifestyle kind of goes out the window a little bit. It's survive, you know, it's live, it's let live. But how many people would prefer to live in a community like Keene or Chesterfield compared to living in a nice place maybe like downtown Manhattan or maybe a not-so-nice place like Roxbury, Mass? I mean...
Well, I know that there's 7 million people in New York, so there's 7 million people that are going there for work, for fun, or because they found something affordable. I mean, there's 5 million people right. in Chicago.
Add on top of that 170 million people. Chicago probably wouldn't be so fun.
Well,
no trouble selling out the baseball games.
Keep in mind, these things don't happen overnight. These things are very organic.
Right.
You mentioned the businessman. If he's trying to start a business, he has to know the customer base he has. Well, that equation affects every single decision to some degree or another. Anyone who doesn't want to go bankrupt, and presumably that's most people. There's always idiots out there who'll do anything. But if, assuming they don't want to go bankrupt, they have to make that decision. It magnifies the more people you have. Keep in mind, if this had happened from the beginning, you would have an enormous private infrastructure, all of it owned to some degree by people who are desperate for people to come and shop and buy and rent and whatever in their properties. I mean, it happens in shopping centers. It happens in large apartment complexes, condo complexes.
Yeah. The point is we're at where we are at now. How much time should be wasted on trying to convert back to what you suggest?
Well, I have some trouble thinking that government's going to just, like, go back to that because it would be new and people, I mean, listen to the difficulty of some of the libertarians discussing it.
But because it's because of the difficulty placed upon the people who are used to the way things are now.
Yeah.
Meaning that of a sudden, 20 years from now, because in 5 years they implement the privatization of the roadways, I have to tell my wife, well, we got to move and sell our house and move closer to Keene because we just can't, you know, the car's taking a beating, the road is falling apart. We can't drive there anymore. And the ultimate decision would be we have no choice. We have to do that.
That's the problem of there being too much force in the beginning of the equation. You're right. There would be an enormous issue of trying to convert over, but that's the problem. That problem was caused entirely by government. If government,
right? Okay, so you provided the cost, and this is why I think that a lot of times we just spin our wheels. Fine, you did a great job giving us the history. We know what the cause is. Have a realistic solution, or at the very least, put together a checklist. What's most important? What's least important, include only the most important things in the argument, and leave the least important things out there because those are the things that make people go, I'm changing the channel. I'm not going to listen. These people drive me nuts because they are. That's all I'm suggesting. You want change? I understand change. I understand and relate to a lot of the issues that are presented. Stay away from the crazy stuff. You know, Ross Perot had a lot of great ideas. By the way, he saw a lot of the problems that we have now coming down the pike. He was the one that warned us about the deficit and about borrowing too much money. But he also had a lot of crazy talk in there. And guess who didn't become president? Guess who wasted an opportunity of a lifetime? Because he had the resources. He had the knowledge to become president. But he put too many bad things out there with the good. That's all I recognize. Really good phone call, though. I agree with a lot of what you're saying. Good, we understand the history. We understand the cause and effect. Now, how do you change things realistically where people are going to listen to you and not get turned off? That's the big problem. 357-1290. We'll use that phone number tomorrow at 6. Tomorrow at 5, the eye-opener with Paul Shearing. What are the final results of tonight's vote or the voting going on today relative to the school district in Keene? You'll find out tomorrow. You and I will get together then. News up next on WKBK Keene.